You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, May 6th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, some call it genocide by default. Republican plan for the pandemic pivots to let it ride. Meanwhile, mission accomplished. White House seeks to disband the coronavirus task force. Recently fired top U.S. vaccine official turns whistleblower on the White House crap show. And surprise, Kushner's kleptocrats behind government failure to secure safety equipment. Meanwhile, K Street seeks a bailout for lobbyists. Supreme Court hears a case today to expand which employees can deny contraceptive coverage. Which employers can deny contraceptive coverage to their employees. Meanwhile, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they'll all be calling in. She'll be doing it, hopefully, as she's just getting out of the hospital. Meanwhile, good news. Latest polls show the Republicans in danger of a Senate loss, or I should say loss of the Senate. And meanwhile, Trump's reelection campaign looks as rife with corruption and grift as his administration. All this and more on today's program. In terms of that last one, I mean, it's good. You know, there is, there's actually substantial political science, research that shows that in fact, when politicians make promises, during their campaigns, they end up actually keeping them more or less. And so, it is nice that the grift that, the president is running the country in that way is reflected in his political campaign. So that's good. Brad Parscale, his campaign manager, has gone from a guy who I think cut videos literally like, with all due respect to, Matthew Film Guy, to a guy who owns a $24 million house in a matter of a year or two. So it's pretty good work if you can get it, cutting that video. Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Joining us today, Michael Brooks from his abode in. Look at that! Look at you! Like we're just watching. Like you got a lot more art behind you now.
Yeah, reset the shot a little bit.
I see. You got it. You opened it up, or you're just actually doing some decorating?
A little bit of A, a little bit of B.
All right, fair enough.
How you doing up there?
Oh, well, I mean, you don't want to know. My situation is rather predictable, actually.
What is the most stressful possible scenario?
It's not quite that as much as it is like if you were to try and predict how this scenario would go, the easiest answer, the most obvious answer is actually in this instance, the correct one. There's no like, wow, that is a crazy story. No, it's like, that's a story exactly as how you would expect it to go.
So it's not like, that's how Slate used to do their editorial. Like, this didn't go as expected.
Right.
It's not the opposite.
A contrarian piece.
Right.
No.
Right.
I will say this. We have a new sponsor. I don't even have the ad copy for it yet. But they have sent, samples of CBD, but the good stuff. the really good stuff. Like some of it all, frankly, some of it looks like pot. I mean, I don't know why I have to whisper that. I guess maybe it's because of the, but I used the tincture last night. So I actually got the first good night's sleep I've had in about 3 or 4 weeks. We're gonna be advertising for these guys at Sunset Lake very soon, but they're out of Vermont. It's all organic. I mean, it's pretty awesome.
I need to try some of that.
Oh,
my sleep schedule is totally effed.
Oh, you do, believe me. We will get into that, but today we're going to be talking. I mean, look, we are watching a, and I hope this is wrong, but it's sort of like, I mean, honestly, it is as if we were watching people being pushed off the side of a building in slow motion, and you're sitting there, you're watching the pushing, and you know that gravity exists, and you're still like, well, maybe there'll be a big gust of wind, or maybe, you know, like the laws of physics will be suspended. But you know that that's not actually the case. And that's what we're watching right now as the administration promotes the loosening of our, the way that we have been organizing ourselves to deal with the coronavirus. This, there's two or three reasons why this is happening. They are all interrelated. One is the president wants to project that they've handled this, and he thinks that the deaths of 2,000 to 3,000 Americans for months is either something that people won't notice or won't be as relevant in the states. I mean, I'm convinced they've probably done a breakdown in their in the White House, and they're looking at this and they're going like, okay, Georgia might be a problem, but not necessarily with our voters. And, you know, we've Nebraska might be a problem, but not with our voters because they're not working in the meat processing plants. They just own the plants. I mean, I'm quite convinced that someone has come to him with this type of breakdown.
Doubt that for a second.
That it's like, you know, it might be like 51-50, but it's like a toss-up. But if we don't do this, we're definitely going to lose. So it's worth the try, and that's what they're doing. And I think that's what's happening in terms of like what is pushing the White House, because a lot of the states that are supportive of the president are far less dense. And obviously, the stay-at-home orders are to create less density, right? I mean, at least in terms of like where people gather. I mean, in a micro level, the stay-at-home order is to create less density. And there are a lot of states where it's just not that dense. A lot of areas of the country where it's very rural. And that, I think, is the idea out of the White House. And then
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
In terms of the Republican states, I mean, oh, all you need to do is look at Ohio for a perfect example of this. And, you know, we've heard the governor of Iowa say something to this as well. But in Ohio, they have begun to loosen things. They have set up a website for employees to report on businesses who are not following the Ohio's, you know, health guidelines or CDC health guidelines. No, that's not what it's for. It's a website that where you can report COVID-19 quits or refusals of workers to work because it's too dangerous for them to work there, so that these people can be denied unemployment insurance efficiently. That's what's going on here. The moral hazard, and that's in quotes, of people deciding that in the midst of a pandemic, they don't feel comfortable risking their lives to work at the hair salon basically is driving, and it's not just the moral hazard, right? It's also they don't want to pay the unemployment.
Yeah.
And we should make it clear that DeWine now has announced today massive cuts to education and public services there and is refusing to spend money from the rainy day fund. Contemplate this.
This would be a rainy day.
What else would be a rainy day except for we're in the midst of an unprecedented pandemic and receiving an unprecedented shock to our economy? No, because he wants the money there so that you don't have to justify, you know, tax cuts for wealthy people. I mean, that's what's going on here. And
I mean, look, there's an opportunity here to, and they see it very clearly, not only another concentration of wealth and resources, which we saw in the bailout, but another degrading of working standards generally. So, of course, I listened to Nouriel Roubini yesterday on Bloomberg, and, you know, he was the guy who first got some recognition for predicting the recession. And I mean, the 2008 financial crisis. And I mean, he's predicting the worst of all worlds because he's like, there's enough being injected into the economy that you could see basically like a stagflation with degraded work standards across the board.
And this is the point, you know, we heard a lot about during the Democratic campaign about structural reform and people not wanting structural change and, you know, we're getting it.
Yeah,
what the Republicans are doing are creating structural changes to our economy and to our social safety net and to the way our society works. And supposedly, the Democrats are really going to hand it to them this time, but it could very well be late because too late. Because I don't know what it is that the Democrats don't have the ability, it seems, to basically say, Republicans own this, and therefore we're going to go for stuff that we think is unique in terms of what we were to advocate for. They own this. Most of them believe you spend money, or the government needs to spend money to hire people when they're in office, we should say. They don't believe it when a Democrat's in office. But when they're in office, they know the laws of economics. And that the Democrats should have been leveraging this throughout that period of time. The only thing that could save the Democrats, and frankly the rest of us, is if things get so clearly bad enough that, and then the Democrats have the opportunity to leverage that. I don't know that they will do it at that time, but
that's hopefully how they always win. I mean, I keep repeating this, but they win in Republican abject massive failure, or if they have an exceptionally charismatic figurehead on a presidential ticket.
Well, I'm not even talking about the election. I'm talking about the enormous amount of money that's going out the door and where.
I'm
talking.
Oh yeah, that's not going to happen. not to be too cynical, but we have to see. I mean, what's also disturbing to me is that you don't even have, like in the UK, you have a lot of people at least attempting to say, we want to keep doing this third way center left model. And here's what that looks like in 2020. I don't agree with those prescriptions at all, but you have a thought process going on. I don't see any thought process on any level. I don't see a thought process on how to hold Republicans accountable. I don't see an alternative to Sanders, to a Sanders agenda. I basically see we'll build a little bit off of Obama, and then we'll keep our heads down.
It's completely like, let's just make sure that we're not part of this equation.
But of course they are. I mean,
well, of course,
you know, I mean, and that's the, and that is a, you know, and that's a, that is an unhelpful contempt for the electorate in that case, because that's obvious to people.
We can talk about the election in a bit. I am talking about right now.
Do you think they'll get another bite at the apple though?
What's that?
You think they'll get another bite at the apple legislatively?
Oh, I think it's impossible to imagine that there's not going to be another bailout. I mean,
sure. But
I think it's impossible to imagine.
But what would they have to do? I mean, just within the
realm. They need to go and they'll pass legislation in the House.
Right.
And what they need to do is go about 50% bigger on everything that they want. And they basically need to say, you know, and maybe, if anything, shortchange the obvious stuff that everybody wants so that the Senate has to force them to raise those numbers that everybody wants. And they get the numbers that they want, including, I would also put into that voting voter protection.
I would assume that enough... I mean, one is, I do think, you know, obviously Pelosi personally is not there on a lot of policy, but I, you know, there must be, just looking at it, trying to come up with a rash, with an actual reason here of how they've conducted themselves. There must be enough members of the Democratic House caucus that don't want those bigger, you know, they don't want to do it. They don't want additional protections, additional funding. I mean,
I don't think there was the opportunity. I just don't think there was the opportunity to pass that bill. And I think that was a question of leadership. Yeah, because I think the House just, you know, decided not to do it that way, to just cede to the Senate. And I suspect that's because Chuck Schumer is, you know, beside himself with how well he thinks he did. They were bragging. No money can go to the Trump family. Like, that's a big accomplishment. I mean, I don't know that we can tell what the dynamic is between those two. But I've been hearing reporting that Chuck Schumer was so satisfied with what happened with the CARES Act in the Senate that he put the kibosh on the House, you know, bringing their own thing. Now, I think Nancy Pelosi was probably more than happy not to do much, but just a reminder, today's majority report is made possible in part by Skillshare. The first 500 people who go to skl.sh/majorityreport8, majorityreport8, are going to get a free premium membership to Skillshare for 2 entire months. Skillshare is an online learning community that offers thousands of classes on any topic you can imagine, classes that are taught by experts in their fields. They got classes on drawing. They got classes on ukulele. I know they got classes on ukulele. I am learning songs on the ukulele right now from Skillshare. They got classes in web design. They got classes in photography. They got classes in cooking. You want to learn how to make a great cup of coffee. You want to learn how to make sourdough bread, whatever it is. Running a small business, business analytics. I'm just going through all the stuff that I've been, how to learn, how to teach. That's some of that. I have yet to find the class to find Saul to stop screaming. But all the classes are less than an hour long. They split them up into chapters, essentially, bite-sized lessons. So it's easy to, you know, if you've got kids who are hassling you, if you got a lot of stuff to do, you watch one, then you go deal with them. You watch another, you go deal with them. Everyone can benefit from learning a new skill, brushing up on something that you have that you've been doing. Has classes for every skill level, so you can improve on stuff that you know. You can learn new stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Membership to Skillshare is less than $10 a month. It gives you access to their entire library of classes. However, the first 500 people who go to skl.sh/majorityreport8 are going to get a free membership for 2 whole months.
Go learn.
Put the link underneath this video if you're watching on YouTube. It's in the podcast description if you are listening. Also, this ad is a warning. Our democracy is under attack from the U.S. Supreme Court in about a million different ways. In the middle of a deadly global pandemic, people across Wisconsin are planning on voting absentee to keep themselves and their families safe. They were planning, but on that night before the election, 5 Republican justices on the Supreme Court told thousands of people they would choose or have to choose between risking their lives and forfeiting their right to vote. This Supreme Court favoring Republican interests over our democracy is nothing new. They gutted the Voting Rights Act. They invited billionaires and corporations to spend unlimited amounts to try and influence elections. They gave a green light to gerrymandering, voter ID laws, voter roll purges. And now a progressive movement is rising up to fight back. Because it's quite possible the Wisconsin case won't be the last 2020 showdown over voting rights to be settled in the courts this year. We simply cannot trust this court to put aside partisan views and protect people's rights to vote. Our courts are becoming too political. It's time to say enough. Learn more about how you can join the fight by visiting demandjustice.org/majority. That's demandjustice.org/majority. Folks, head over there right now to check out this organization. The ED Brian Fallon was the one who sent the who filed the complaint that is going to the Supreme Court about the way that McConnell went around pressuring people about his protege being picked. Right now the Supreme Court is deciding, you know, can we let moral standards as opposed to religious standards justify an employer for not offering contraception through their healthcare plan? I mean, contemplate what that means. First off, a company has morals?
Really?
Like, I think you would actually get in trouble from a fiduciary standpoint if you were a public company and said, well, from a moral standpoint, we're not going to do X, Y, or Z. But put that aside. What does that even mean? How do we, and then where does it stop? Well, you know what? I have a moral problem with two guys being married. I'm not going to get, they're not eligible for health care at all. His husband. Are you serious? I have a moral problem with that. In fact, I have a moral problem with people who gain so much at home. Matt, I think you're a moral degenerate for playing those violent games. And I understand that maybe some of you folks are smoking pot. I know it's legal, but I have a moral issue with it. That's what we're talking about. And for once, there's an organization that is explicitly trying to shape the pool and the process of choosing judges for the next Democratic president. And he and Fallon some time ago said, like, there should be no corporate lawyers who get appointed judges, period, by the next Democratic administration. Super important. All right, let's go on to demandjustice.org/majority. Go check it out. So Donald Trump, you know, really hard. I think everybody goes through this, Michael. I'm sure you do too. How do I prioritize what I got to do? How do I prioritize what I got to do? I want to golf. But then
they do at this point.
I got work, right? Like, there's a whole, it's very difficult.
Yes.
And I think this is when we get to see Donald Trump at his most vulnerable and in many ways his most human. It's a lot of things on his plate. Just some things he couldn't get to.
You know, you're 3 years into your first term.
Yeah.
You're now applying for the job again. What did you do when you became president to restock those cupboards that you say were bare?
Well, I'll be honest. I have a lot of things going on. We had a lot of people that refused to allow the country to be successful. They wasted a lot of time on Russia, Russia, Russia. That turned out to be a total hoax. Then they did Ukraine, and that was a total hoax. Then they impeached the president of the United States for absolutely no reason. And we even had 197-0 vote by the Republicans.
Hey, Brendan, you know, listen, I'm just like, let's just work this out here. We have the president comes into office. There's obviously an investigation that almost starts after that because he fires Comey. Now, Comey was not in charge of replenishing the personal protection stockpiles of the United States, was he?
In the broader sense, you know, it's a team effort.
So, Comey, let me get this straight. Yeah. You are the guy who buys all the N95 masks. Is that right?
Right?
You're fired.
I'm very concerned about the supply chains. Now, get out of my face.
How many times, Brendan, did he play golf before the quarantine?
Trump has played golf 249 days while in office.
Okay. Now, to be fair, that's over the course of 3 years.
Yes.
So 365 days. He didn't even play for a full year. So that's probably once every, that's probably once every 4 days. You know, like Monday you play, Friday you play. Then you play Tuesday. Then you play Saturday. Then you play.
Yeah, because self-care is part of it.
Yeah, because self-care is part of it. Elizabeth Warren and I talked about that.
N95? Well, wait a second.
I mean, it really reminds me of, there's so many similarities between Trump and Bush, actually. And except, you know, they wouldn't present it, obviously, in the same crazy narcissistic way in public. But
right.
I do remember the story of the intelligence briefing before 9/11 and Bush telling the briefers, specifically with a briefing that was highly, like, they're going to use planes. It's going to, like, not
the
a
August 6th PDB, Bin Laden determined to attack America.
Right. And with very specific, you know, not just the sort of like, hey, Bin Laden's out there. He's a bad guy. Very specific, detailed warnings, like unusually good intelligence, it seems to me, from my reading on that area. And Bush said, yeah, you guys covered your asses.
Right.
And then he went out and golfed.
Yep.
And the difference is that Trump would say, like, well, I couldn't focus on 9/11 because these intelligence briefers were constantly bothering me.
Russia,
I couldn't focus.
Russia. Every time I look at it, you see Russia.
Bin Laden.
If David Muir was willing to sacrifice his access and go like, wait, really? Seriously? No, seriously, Mr. President. Seriously. You had a lot of things going on? Like, why did you fire your pandemic response team? Like, you had the time to get rid of that position. And the thing that I'm honestly like, these are all Republican decisions. And there is a complete understandably tendency to focus on Trump. But Donald Trump did not. There's no way in the world that Donald Trump was even aware that there was a pandemic response.
Well, that comes from Bolton.
Yeah.
That comes
and
from Bolton.
Pence.
And right. Right. And I mean, and they've always, yeah. I mean, that's always on the chopping block. I would be shocked, and I am definitely not going to go through the C-SPAN archive to find this, if at CPAC or some other similar gathering, the fact that the Obama administration was so wasteful and effete that there was a pandemic preparedness team at the National Security right. Council wasn't a throwaway applause line of like, look at how stupid and self-indulgent.
They're doing experiments on bats.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously?
I don't know about you, but I want a little bit more national security, a little bit less nurses on my national security team.
Steve Bannon said explicitly, our job is to deconstruct the administrative state. Well, guess what? The absence of all the stuff that we want to happen now, guess what that is? That's
the administrative state. That's right.
Here is Donald Trump talking about essentially opening up. There has been no... What are the broad principles that as we open up that we should be following? Like what is the one thing that you should not do, and what is the one thing that you can do? We don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say
we don't know because there has been no clue.
The principle is we should not open up yet. I mean, we can't in any systemic way. We need to take care of people.
Here is Donald Trump, clip number two, saying We just got to do it. Just got to rip the Band-Aid off.
On the IHME model, which is now showing 134,000 deaths by August, doubling its previous prediction, are you concerned that that's happening because some of these states are relaxing guidelines too early?
No, I'm not, because that assumes no mitigation. We're going to have mitigation. No, we're letting people out. But the fact that we're letting people go and go to their jobs, they have to do it. You know, if they held people any longer with the shutdowns, and you're going to lose people that way too, and you already have, I'm sure. But between drug abuse and, I mean, they say suicide, a lot of different things. There's no win, just so you know. There's no great win one way or the other, but I'll tell you where there is a win. We're going to build a country. I did it once. 2 months ago, we had the greatest economy in the history of the world, the best employment numbers we've ever had in history, right? I mean, everybody agrees. Even CNN agrees with that one. But I will say this, we're going to do it again, and that's what we're starting. And I view these last couple of days as the beginning. We're going to build the greatest economy in the world again, and it's going to happen pretty fast.
A ventilator in every pot. We're going to build it. We're going to build it over again. We're just going to get it. There's no win. And so, you know, there's a lot of people committing suicide right now that, and look, I mean, there are a lot of people
Who
are at home who have a harder time dealing with this for a myriad of reasons, than others. But having people die around them because we're going out there and just hopefully being able to keep it under 3,000 a day. That's the game plan, trying to keep the deaths under 3,000 a day. And he's talking about that new, you know, the Washington model said 60,000 people dying. We are now, I think, what are we at now today? 75,000?
I think we're, I thought it had cracked 80, but I could be wrong.
By August, I got news for you folks. We're going to be ahead of 135 as well.
We need to just keep reviewing this dynamic, and it's always the same point, but it just needs to get hammered again and again and again, though, which is that there has not been a proper social provision for people to stay home. And that is going to feed the dynamic of all of the other horrific consequences of a Great Depression in economic terms. People are going to, you know, have higher incidence of anxiety, depression, mental health, domestic abuse is skyrocketing. There's all sorts of horrific social consequences to this, all of which could be ameliorated by the obvious and basic steps that don't happen. Getting rid of rent, giving people money. I was actually read something that is so disturbing to me because I was reading and it was fascinating. The state of Kerala in India has been very successful in how they've dealt with this. And they have a very longstanding social infrastructure. Basically, they have a long democratic communist state government there, basically. And they have mobilized labor unions and youth groups and all sorts of other social organizations to deliver food to people and even the governor of the province said, we're physically distancing, but we're socially connected. And that's going to build the base of how we deliver people their needs. And they haven't done a UBI because they were concerned about the effect of price inflation with the UBI on food and other essentials.
Right.
And it was a compelling argument. And the thing was like the United States doesn't even really have the social infrastructure that this place does yet to work around not having something like UBI. And I mean, anyways, the point is that as long as people don't have the necessities delivered to them, there will be a horrifying consequence to staying in quarantine, and the Republicans will be able to exploit it.
I don't think we're at that point yet, frankly. I mean, look at the polling. 70 to 80% of the people want to stay home.
Absolutely.
And even 60% of Republicans. And I think what we're seeing is we're seeing more rural states, and we're seeing states where, frankly, there are people who have been watching television. I mean, look, to find people in New York, like, I wonder what the polling is in New York, right? I mean, if you look at,
I would imagine it's higher than the national number.
But if you look at, like, the city, and if you were look even like within a 2 to 3 hour radius of New York, because of the connections that people have to the city, the level in which they take it, how seriously they take this, is much higher. And I can understand in the context of, like, you're out in North Dakota and you're thinking, what, like,
well, that's the thing that that's the thing I'd wonder about, is getting into that. You know, that's another one. I wonder how targeted they're looking at those, because the overall national numbers are very clear. People want to stay in quarantine.
I would bet.
But when you go, and I'm wondering though, when you get into different swing states, different people they need to mobilize, different geographies, I don't know. I think most people do want to stay home, period. But I also think that just bluntly, it gives them the talking points. What I wonder from their perspective, I get that Trump is just anxious and freaked out, and he loves to brag about the economy, and he can't brag about the economy. But, like, this isn't going to work. You know, that's the thing. It's like, they force things open.
They're
idiots. This is going to spike the crisis. It's going to freak people out. People's social behaviors have already radically changed in terms of even going back to places that are prematurely reopened. I don't, like, what, there isn't going to be, oh my God, we're out again. Let's go to the restaurant. Let's go to the gym. Like, that's not happening. And that relates to the numbers that you pointed out earlier. Most people want to be in quarantine, and most people take this really seriously. So there isn't going to be this magical outpouring of folks.
No, thankfully. I think I would be shocked if this actually increases the economic activity to the extent that they think it will. But again, there's also areas of the country where they do not take this seriously at all.
Right.
They have been bathing in Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson. You know, we're all saying, like, there's no evidence that says that staying at home works. And they're all just assuming that it's going to be fine when they go out. And I mean, maybe, again, it's like, I don't know, I could drop this pen and, you know, like, if I do it 100 times, maybe on the 99th time it'll float. I mean, I don't know. But the physics of this have not changed. There's no reason to believe, like, the virus is not less around. It is not less fatal. It is not less, you know, there, nothing has diminished about the virus. Even our knowledge base has not grown as much as one would hope in terms about it. The only things that have changed is that in some areas of the country, we have more people wearing masks, which is definitely helpful. In some areas of the country,
also undermined by the same, you know, by Mike Pence not wearing a mask. So even to the extent that is true, and we can start to normalize certain things if we take precautions, those precautions are undermined by the same people who are saying, let's just open it up.
Yep. Here is Donald Trump. Let's play that clip. Here's one. We have two more. Or actually, no, here it is. Let's go. This. Let's play number five. This
Trump
is
Trump heavy yeah. day.
Listen, guys. We're warriors. We're all warriors. This is it. This is like the most reminiscent when we got attacked on 9/11. One of the things that George Bush was saying, that to preserve the American way, we need to go out and shop. You need to go out and shop, everybody. Get out there and shop. And in some way, this is what Donald Trump is. Wants us to look inside ourselves and see ourselves as warriors. Go get the disease. You can't be touched.
I just want to finish a follow-up. If I understand you don't want to keep the country closed for 5 years, but don't you want your advisors to keep looking at this closely the way
well,
you
they
have?
They are looking at it very closely. And And I just said it today. I used the word for the first time, I think, in terms of what we're doing. I'm viewing our great citizens of this country to a certain extent and to a large extent as warriors. They're warriors. We can't keep our country closed. We have to open our country. Somebody said, oh, we could keep it for the next 18 months. We could keep it for the next 2 years. Doug Ducey's done an incredible job as the governor of Arizona. The people aren't going to accept it. They won't accept it, and they shouldn't accept it. We have a great country. We can't keep it closed. I mean, I've had doctors say, well, why don't we close it for a couple of years? This is the United States of America. I created, with a lot of other very talented people and the people of our country, the greatest economy in the history of the world, the greatest that we've ever had, the greatest employment numbers, the best numbers we've ever had, the best stock markets. I think we had 144 days of record stock markets. And then one day they said, we have to close our country. Well, now it's time to open it up. And you know what? The people of our country are warriors, and I'm looking at it. I'm not saying anything is perfect. And yes, will some people be affected? Yes. Will some people be affected badly? Yes. But we have to get our country open, and we have to get it open soon. Maybe I could ask Doug if you'd like to.
Yeah. You know what I'm just struck by is and I guess this shouldn't be a surprise in terms of, and I think this sort of is in some respects an American affliction, but he really does feel like he's been cheated.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is not fair.
Totally unfair.
I did everything right.
Yep.
And then China did it to me. The Democrats did it to me. They brought the corona. And that's not fair. So we're opening up. Doesn't count. This doesn't exist. It's reminiscent of like a 7-year-old. It's just like, but you told me we could watch a movie, but I'm sorry, the power's out. The TV doesn't work. But you said I could watch a movie. I know, but the power is out and we can't turn the TV on. But you said. Well, yes, I know. I mean,
you're having power problems up there?
It happens. Oh, but that is.
I knew that was plucked from the.
Oh, yeah. No, no.
The real life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, no, I mean, I think that's, yeah, of course.
Same exact attitude.
Of course. And I also, you know, look, even in the most resilient of economies that had all the things that I want an economy to have, obviously a pandemic would affect it very negatively. But I have to say, you know, the idea that this economy is so great and so robust and so incredible and jobs that are already completely underpaid, undervalued, and disrespected that don't have any protection built into them could be shed by tens of millions in a matter of weeks. I don't know if that's not the robust economy I'd want to go into the future with, no matter what the stock market was doing. And by the way, the stock market is not necessarily doing bad. It's been all over the place. I mean, this is another horrifying proof that the stock market can do just great. I read an analysis last week in the Financial Times. And you could tell some of these traders were very intrigued. They were like, we can have this level of unemployment and this level of stock performance? Well, that's very interesting.
Well, that is a function of $4 trillion.
Yeah, of course.
Being pumped into.
Of course.
I mean, I think in 6 to 12 months, we're going to look back on this time and we're going to see, it's almost as if there is been, an embalming fluid put into the body of our economy at this point. And so it's stiff and the body can stand up and it's rigid. It hasn't collapsed, but that's because it has been, the essentially just one element of it has been pumped in. There's two implications of that. One is, again, and we said this, you know, when we were talking about the CARES 1 or CARES 2 in the first place, everybody's on a yellow flag going around the track, and one small segment of the people in our society have been basically said, you've got the green flag, you can go full speed, because they're getting trillions of dollars of free money that they're borrowing now, and they're just essentially buying all the assets, the distressed assets they can, and all they're all flush with cash. At one point, it's quite possible that maybe it never catches up to them. At one point, the real question is going to be, once we get out of this sort of state of shock that we're in right now and people start to realize, like, you know, we're still within the window of the 10 weeks of like small businesses having essentially loans or grants to pay their payroll. But we're the 10 weeks runs out in mid-June, and then there's nothing. And we're going to start to see the impact of the unemployment money not getting there. And we're going to start to see the impact of people saying, I mean, here's Dennis Prager basically just laying out what all the Republican governors are basically either maybe saying or maybe just sort of implying or maybe just hinting at, but this is their agenda. Here's Dennis Prager basically laying it all out for everybody in the positive. It's everything we've been saying.
The Rosa Parks for him, of our
it's
time.
In the positive, number nine.
Anyway, this was the issue here. U.S. businesses fear a wave of litigation as workers in meat processing facilities, grocery stores, and other locations get sick or die from the COVID-19 illness caused by the new coronavirus. I'm just curious, in America, do you not have the...
It must be signing up with my video. Hold on one second.
This guy is the most incredible bagman for these people.
Well, I mean, he's given away the game a little bit here. I mean, look, and we all know.
I think they've been giving away the game for a while. I mean, it's amazing how blunt they've been. Going back to the frigging lieutenant governor of Texas.
Yep.
I mean, and I think he was a little, frankly, he was a little premature. It's probably not right in the beginning couple of weeks of absolute shock and horror to say, hey, it's time to start thinking about killing people's grandparents. But now we're right on time.
Workers in meat processing facilities, grocery stores, and other locations get sick or die from the COVID-19 illness caused by the new coronavirus. I'm just curious, in America, do you not have the...
Can you play it from the browser?
Well, while you're looking at it, I mean, I haven't seen this clip yet, but I'm guessing in America, do you not have the right to work? In America, do you not have the right to provide for your family?
Am I not allowed to go bungee cord jumping?
Right.
Well, are people going to stop me from bungee cord jumping? That can be dangerous.
I want to skydive during Corona. This isn't Nazi Germany.
Remember, here's the dynamic, right? They open up, and that when you open up the state, that means that if you don't show up at work, you don't get unemployment. You're afraid of working at the hair salon? Sorry. You don't show up, you don't get unemployment. Go ahead.
Get sick or die from the COVID-19 illness caused by the new coronavirus. I'm just curious, in America, do you not have the right to quit your job? Can somebody explain why?
Pause it. Okay, here we're going. This is classic libertarian, right? Like, no one's forcing you to work. No one's forcing you to work. You just make a decision. I need to eat, and I have weighed out, do I want to eat? Do I want to pay for rent? Do I want to pay my mortgage? Do I want to buy groceries? Do I want to, you know, have electricity on at my house? Do I want to get my kid something for their birthday? And you're just making a determination. And in this instance, it's not just, do I want to bag groceries for that ability? Or do I want to you know, cut hair for that ability? Or do I want to work at the cafe for that ability? Or do I want to work construction for that ability? Now it's just the calculation is, do I want to do those things plus risk my life or getting seriously ill for 3 or 4 weeks? I don't have sick pay. And he's just saying, like, it's your choice. It's your choice. This is the classic libertarian theory here, that there is no such thing as economic coercion, that coercion can only happen at the butt of a gun, but it cannot happen when it's like your kid's health is in stake, your health is at stake, your ability to eat, your ability to sleep somewhere. That doesn't exist in the minds of libertarians.
It's not a quote that I'll butcher, but it's something to the effect of the market in all of its infinite wisdom. Basically, the rich man and the poor man are both equally free to sleep under a bridge.
Right.
You know, exactly.
They're not equally free to sleep in the castle, though.
They are certainly not equally free to sleep, or they're not equally free to sit in what appears to be some type of quarantine studio.
Oh,
and bloviate about how people should have the capacity, if they so choose, to risk getting a deadly virus because they it's so urgently necessary that people get tats again right now.
Just remind me again, do people have a right to quit their job? Go ahead. What a smug ass.
An employer can be sued if you contract COVID-19 there. What if you contracted the regular flu and died, as tens upon tens of thousands do every year? What if you got that at work? I'm telling you, you're watching your country ruined by the left. I mean, tell me why this is not an example. Tell me what the moral legitimacy is of being able to sue a company, and it'll put it out of business. I mean, it's obvious. These lawsuits are huge.
All right, I'll tell you what it is, what the moral legitimacy is. There is a concept in the law of negligence. We have made it the law in this country that you have a responsibility to provide a safe environment for people to work at. You must do what is reasonable. There is a reasonable standard. Are you reasonably aware of the threat? Are you taking reasonable measures to mitigate that threat? So in other words, I call my workers into work at my store. How can I reasonably mitigate the threat? Well, I'm sure people have been to places where you see plexiglass in front of the clerk, so that there is now, they can't breathe directly on you. Maybe I turn off the air conditioning and bring in only fans. Maybe I keep the doors open. Maybe I make sure that everybody has a mask when they come in to work, and I don't let customers in unless they have a mask. But if I'm an employer who doesn't want to have to deal with certain employees, I can just say, like, I'm not doing that. And then that person has to decide, like, well, am I going to go into that unsafe work environment? There's nobody to protect me. There's no OSHA coming anymore. And I have to choose between going in there and getting paid or losing unemployment insurance. That's why we need protections for workers. And when OSHA doesn't work, then we have civil liability that exists. And that's why Mitch McConnell, their Mangio line or whatever it is we want to make sure that there's no liability for corporations and for entities in this situation. We want to give them blanket immunity. And that's what's going on here. It's as simple as that. All right, let's take a break, head into the fun half of the program. A reminder, folks, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget, sign up for the AM Quickie. The AM Quickie has also moved to our other YouTube channel. YouTube.com/MajorityReportAudio. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Michael, last night was Tuesday. What happened on TMS?
Talked with Torre Reed, who wrote this book, Toward Freedom. Actually, Sam, I'd recommend, I think you might really enjoy him.
Is University of Illinois?
Exactly.
That's right.
Yep. Really, really fascinating book on the New Deal. We talked about and black labor and civil rights. We talked about the Moynihan Report. Doris Polo, she joined us from Ecuador. We talked about the mercenaries in Venezuela, the political conflicts inside the Caribbean itself, and how they're trying to maintain independence from the United States, even as the United States is stealing ventilators. This is a way in which by the way, this is how they're evoking. You know when people say, well, that's a populist move. This is how they're invoking the Defense Production Act to make sure ventilators don't get to Barbados or Jamaica.
Right, so they can actually intercept stuff rather than force corporations to produce stuff at a reasonable price.
Well, including, I mean, even one case, the one in Barbados wasn't even a purchase. It was actually a charitable donation to the state from an individual wealthy donor that was redirected. So we talked about that in CARICOM. I talked about the what's driving this new Cold War with China. I looked specifically at the competition between China and the United States and the international arms market, which is something that people should brush up on. And we did a whole bunch of other stuff in the post game, a lot of stuff on the show, patreon.com/TMBS. Thursday, Daniel Besser and I are streaming. Sunday, Pepe Escobar and I are streaming. And go to Red Emma's and get Against the Web.
Go to where?
Red Emma's is a worker-owned bookstore in Baltimore, and Colin, he's been in studio. You met him.
Can you? Is there a website?
I think it is. I don't know the name of the website off.
How are people going? Everybody's going to go to Baltimore during the shutdown?
No. Then you can order it online.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, I understand what you're. I'm trying to think though. What is the name of the web? I think it's Red Emma's. Is it on the blog, Brendan? I'm not sure. I'll get back on that. What?
Link will be in the description.
And
question is, what happened?
RedEmmas.org. It's RedEmmas.org.
What is the, is there an assessment on what that crew of people who went down to Venezuela? It's sort of like a Trump version of Bay of Pigs.
It is like a Trump version of Bay of Pigs. It's, we'll see. Right? I mean, Trump denies that he knows anything about this. I think there's photos. I mean, at the very least, some people involved in this company have done some security at Trump events. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, my cats.
And they're involved in rail. And this also might connect to a long-form piece we did last year on, it was a different company, but there was a bunch of guys arrested at a bank in Haiti. And they were basically there to take like $1 billion out of a Haitian bank. Long story short, they got arrested by local police because they got pulled over in a car that had drones and machine guns in it. And they ended up getting sent back to Florida. And the Trump administration was like, we're going to investigate this. This looks sketchy, but just send them home. And then they got like, you and I have probably spent more time in an airport getting questioned after like a Caribbean vacation than these guys did. And then they were back at it. So,
but part of the responsibility for that is everybody who gave Guaido a standing ovation.
That's
right. Because that's definitely played into those guys' value calculation. Like, who knows how much official okay they had.
Right.
But if it worked, all those people would have supported it.
Well, the guy, from what I've read, the guy was promised from Guaido or Guaido affiliated people at least $1.5 million down payment to start. And they didn't get it. And they still did it because they're freedom fighters. And they must have thought, like, we're going to get paid off from this.
Yeah. They thought it was going to be a serious payday. And you're absolutely right. And it's not, it's standing ovations in the United States. Guaido was just in Europe. He's been in Canada.
Missed it by that much. I saw the boat and I thought you guys really had a chance.
I'm just excited for the Oliver Stone adaptation and the return of, our favorite actors.
I am all about Oliver Stone making a movie about this.
As a Mar-a-Lago.
Oliver Stone is right about this. Oliver Stone is very much right about this stuff.
Check out the Noma Key Show. You can find it at patreon.com/the Noma Key Show and also a Noma Key Const on YouTube and the Antifada. Find it at patreon.com/theAntifada. Matt, what's happening on Literary Hangover?
Literary Hangover is being very active on twitch.tv now. So twitch.tv/literaryhangover. We're going to do some Half-Life and 1984 maybe tonight. Also playing Kingdom Come Deliverance and listen to Karl Kautsky on the Middle Ages. So a lot of deep stuff going on there. So that's what I want everyone to do. Follow the twitch.tv/literaryhangover.
I'm sort of shocked that you haven't been kicked out of that apartment yet, but all right, folks.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just so jealous, frankly. See you in the fun half. What?
Jamie may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiot.